Mike, it sounds like you're almost carried on your own validity. With 200 new patients, the demand for what you guys are doing is so tremendous. People know that it's almost a privilege to be in your practice.
Well, it is true. We don't care whether they accept the treatment.
Right. So you're at the validity stage.
Yes and no. We're at the service stage. And I loved your yesterday when you were talking about Schmiegelism. Let me change the Schmiegel to a doctor who has no purpose in his practice other than making money. They become Golan. I mean, you know, they become my pretty. Right. I, you know, I want the money. You know, exactly. and they change. They don't even see the change. Yeah. Their staff sees a change. Their staff won't follow doctor whose purpose is making money. It's got to be more than that. And when I go into a case presentation, I never draw a line in the sand. It's not my way or the highway. See, patients vote with their feet. And if all you see is the back of their heads,
something's not right.
Wrong. Okay, so if you're service-oriented, then and you've done that permission statement right, you know, where you say, well, you know, your job is to do some of it all or none of it. You know, it's up to you. Now, I understand you have insurance. I mean, there's good insurance, bad insurance. I know what you got. But, you know, if we find something that's not covered by insurance or not covers all, what do you want us to do about that? And get a thoughtful response. You just go down the line. And, you know, when it comes down, like you say, if you've done all of those things right, every step should get easier. So the close isn't, you know, were you thinking about a red car or a blue car? Well, was that leather or a vinyl? You know, you don't do trial balloons and closes and stuff like that. And I've read all the Zig Ziglar closing the sales, and just like you have, and I think it demeans the practice and makes the patient see a line in the sand. I want them to feel going in that we lose no patients, none. I mean, I'm their dentist, whether they have a tooth out or they fix it. I only present one treatment plan, and it's generally the finest treatment plan that I think they would, you know, they would
do. Okay, let's suppose that I'm a patient,
yes,
and I question. You show me this treatment plan, and it's 5 crowns, and I came in here just for an exam not thinking I needed anything.
Yeah, it's always worse than they thought.
Right, okay, so it's worse than I thought, and you tell me that that's what I need. And I say, you know, I'm not really sure I want to do that just right now.
Okay, now,
but this one tooth that brought me in here, I'd like to probably do something with that. What do you say?
Well, let's get it fixed. I mean, however, before I've ever come in there, a hygienist has pre-assessed you.
Okay.
She's already listening to you and talking to you and bonding with you. I mean, they don't get they don't get upset when I don't treat them. They get upset when they can't get the hygienist they want. I mean, in my practice, you know, probably the biggest, it sounds like an insult, but it's probably the biggest compliment I could get to having partners is that when they go to the front and somebody says, who would you like to see? And they say, well, it doesn't really much matter. They're pretty much all the same. That sounds at first value that, well,
that's a slam at first, but,
yeah, but
it's
really not.
You've achieved
the level of excellence is good all over. Same way with the hygienist. So the hygienist has kind of pre-assessed them. They've actually kind of felt them out towards their budget. They've felt them out as far as their dental IQ and what their expectations are. They've already kind of pre-assessed in the sense that, you know, where they own the problem, she's already mentioned the fact that this is probably going to need a crown. And I understand this is the only one hurting, and that's certainly what you're going to want to get fixed first. And we can do this over a matter of time. We have certain ways to finance it. You know, if you look at the ADA, the time, money, fear, that kind
so
of stuff.
So you're not using anything slick in case
No.
All right, let's flip over to hygiene. Let me ask you. Patient comes in or calls in and says, I want to get my teeth cleaned. They're new to the practice.
Absolutely.
You let them get their teeth cleaned.
Yeah.
Okay, they get in the chair. And they got bark growing down below the gums. What do you say?
Okay. Now, let's go back to that first telephone call.
Okay.
Okay. You're faced with two choices. You know, they said if you try to pre-assess them on the phone, they're faced with either lying.
Right.
Okay. Or hanging up and not making. You know, if you go, well, how long has it been? Well,
or making an appointment and not showing up
exactly.
The worst.
The cancellation no-show problem, okay, that everybody has. Okay. So when they say, yes, ma'am, we clean it. And they ask me how long they've had them cleaned, and, you know, we tell them what the new patient exam, you know, all that stuff. Well, the first thing they do is they'll go in there. They're going to take study models. They're going to take x-rays. They're going to do probing. They're going to do the video camera before they ever start cleaning. The minute they start doing it, if they see that we're talking about calculus bridges and stuff, they're going to start talking very much, you know, I went to Walter Haley's boot camp, and where they talked about blood and pus. I kind of laughed at that because I always called it blood and pus. It didn't sound that weird to me. I mean, you know, that's just the way Bubba's talk.
Right.
And I mean, my God, you've got blood running out of the corner of your mouth. You know, how long have you had that infection? You know, they will start down that road to to let them know that it is worse than they thought. As I say, if it's worse than they thought only when I came in there, then we've blown it.
Right.
Okay. So we start at that level. Now, do we have some people that don't buy into that and go for it? Then we're gonna tell them a cleaning is 40 minutes to an hour. There are no difficult cleanings. If it takes longer than that, you got problems. And you know, generally it'll be like this. The patient will come in and say, yeah, Doc Smith's been taking care of me all my life and, you know, just the best dentist in the world. You know, he did all his own cleanings and just, you know, got everything done. And, you know, that's a signal right there. I mean, there's going to be amalgam crowns and right. You know, calcium bridges. And he's been supervised neglect. But that doctor always says, let's kind of keep an eye on this. You know, and the hygienist will use that. He said, your doctor probably told you that have you ever heard that he was going to kind of keep an eye on this? They don't remember which tooth. You show them in that camera, they're going, yeah, I think he did. And I said, well, I think it's time to start thinking about doing it. And oftentimes, if it's that bad, we'll start doing some of the restorative before we do the full mouth cleaning. I mean, we'll educate them along the line, let them do it at their own pace. But we just have one or two patients a year that get upset.
But if I came in for a cleaning, I get in under the wire and you accept me, and you find out that I'm not a cleaning, will you clean my teeth?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll say, here's what we can do. You know, why did you come in? And he said, well, I've got this wedding. And this garbage is all over my teeth. I said, look, we're going to be able to get all that, and we'll be able to get this fairly clean, but you're more than a cleaning. And what I'm going to suggest is we try to get you back in 3 months. And you know, you take them through whatever they'll do. I mean, Jesus took her at the well and took them where they were and began there. I mean, that's all I can do. And I can't force them to do it. I don't make them sign a piece of paper, you know, that...
Saying that you warned them and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't do that. We do give them a piece of paper that says what we do to create more value to the hygiene appointment and list the things that were wrong, the things we're going to do on the next appointment. But I don't make them sign a waiver, you know, that you know, we've informed you that it's a periodontal disease and, you know, right. All that. So it's no to the charge. But.
So case presentation isn't the secret to your practice. It's kind of like we talked about in the seminar yesterday about investments. It's not what they can do for you. It's what they can do to you.
Well, it's the lifetime investment of a patient. Let's say I twisted their arm to do the soft tissue. The highest cancellation rate, no show, is on the second appointment of a soft tissue management. You've done the diagnostic.
Right.
It's the next one.
Highest no show.
Okay. Highest no show. Now, the second highest no show is someone that makes it through the soft tissue and realize they don't have a penny left to do
to get the
restorative.
Dentistry
done, okay.
Right.
So, and the only way they can get out of there is say, yeah, I'll make the appointment. And they don't show.
Right.
So, I don't see that you've gotten a lot to gain on that.
So, you go ahead and do the dentistry on these people.
Sure.
If they're not ready to do the soft tissue.
Sure. Sure, I'll start it. I mean, you know, I can scale around one tooth. I'm not very good, but I can take one tooth and do a crown or a filling and scale around it. And, you know, I won't lose the patient. So I'm looking at the lifetime. I mean, when they come in, I want to see that dollar bill on their forehead, you know, of what they're worth for a lifetime patient and their family and everything else.
Mike, let's look down the road. You know, though the practice is doing very well, do you see any reason why it shouldn't continue to grow? In other words, have you reached that point where the number of people that move out of McKinney is so great that it doesn't match the number that move in, so your practice is... In other words, can your practice continue to grow if you continue to provide the essence components, cost, convenience, and control, and capacity to accommodate it?
Yes, with a caveat there. I think doctors in general, and probably myself, I mean... It's like Olympic athletes who were at the peak. I mean, everybody reaches their peak at some point. I mean, you can only lay so many bricks yourself.
Right.
And this may be where we vary a little bit in that, you know, I really do believe in partnerships. I really do believe there's a limit to what you can do. But the systems have to be innate, ingrained.
You got to have systems. And let's look at your attitude, too. You're kind of driven. To work. I mean, you're not looking to play more golf by putting these assistants between you and your patients.
No, I mean, when I'm there, I work 4 days a week. I make every penny I make in the world, I make in my dental practice. It's a business for me, and this shouldn't be this way, but a lot of my self-worth, and you see this in doctors, even the ones that say it's not, is tied to what I define as success in my dental practice. I mean, it should be perhaps my faith, or it should probably have to be some other things, but I was brought up kind of type A, I'm kind of driven, and that's, you know, I do have hobbies, but I don't obsess over them like I do my dental practice.
Right, but if you were to withdraw, try to work 2 days a week, put these people between you and your patients, you wouldn't recommend a doctor in that posture try to do what you're doing.
No, I mean...
It'd eat them alive, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, a partner, you know, you can't have partnerships and do that.
Right.
I mean, you have to be poised for growth and really tired so that this guy is coming in with a pent-up demand and you have a vision. I figure my job is vision casting to my staff. I mean, I have doctors that do better dentistry than I do. I mean, that ultimately, that's what you hope in a partner, someone that can be better than you. But I don't think that they have the vision I have. And it's just because I read and read and read a lot. This is kind of funny. I was out. Can you see that?
Yeah, you're sunburned.
No, you see the
white. He has a white spot on his red chest from a book.
A book. I read about 200 books a year. And my wife accuses me of being scared I'm going to die stupid. And I read maybe 30 newsletters a month. And most of what I read has absolutely nothing to do with dentistry. It has to do with other things that are consumer-driven, are things that perhaps are a little bit out of the box. But that's why I like your tapes. I mean, I'm sitting there. The minute your CD comes in, I go out and sit in the truck and listen to it because I don't want anybody bothering me, you know. And so I really enjoy it.
Well, that always scares me, the thought that somebody might actually listen to it. I'll keep that in mind when I'm making it next time. Great ideas. Mike, you know, you've had a lot of contact with a lot of people through your speaking and coaching and your own practice. What would you say to a doctor that was stuck, can't get things moving? Where do you start? How do you go about looking at that?
I'll tell you what. It's always the doctor.
Every time.
Every time. I mean, I've seen doctors that said, it was the economy, I had bad staff, we can't find hygienists, it's a myriad deal. It's always the doctor. And that's what I was saying. You said, do you think it's possible to take and replicate your practice indefinitely
right.
over the period of time? Well, I think if the systems are there, you've got to create a core in your staff. I mean, a core of staff. Now, the average stay of a staff person in my office is 12 and a half years. The only reason it's that low is because we've had to hire new people for the new doctor. They know the systems better than I do, and they really do own the practice. And if I were going to tweak your original concept about a staff-driven practice, mine is probably more purpose-driven and staff-owned. And ownership in a practice really dictates the fact that, you know, they're out there fixing the back door. They're out there picking up stuff. I mean, it's an affront to their personal, you know,
because they own it.
They own it. And purpose-driven, you know, when you think about leadership, there's only two or three leaders, and I'd say 90% of the doctors that I see, the average dentist is an absentee leader. He shows up and fights fire all day long, never gets in front of the curve. Leadership for him is kind of figuring out what direction his staff's going to run around and get in front. Staff's all got a rope on a rock and pulling a different direction. And you get the cowboy, the real assertive leader, that, you know, he always, it's a herd mentality where he drives his staff from the back with a whip and a chain and he can intimidate them. But I, you know, I really lean towards a shepherd type of leadership, where a shepherd always carries the staff and the staff is that purpose. And the sheep, or you know, maybe you shouldn't call your staff a sheep, but the people that you're shepherding can see the staff because it represents help and protection. I mean, my staff makes more money than anybody else in this area. They know that if something were to happen, I would pay for delivery of a baby or a new car or something. I would help their child out of a drug addiction. I would do those things for them. You create a core staff like that own the practice. And then the systems are very easy. Like you say, a staff-driven practice, they'll demand to go to seminars. We spend $150,000 a year minimally on continuing education for my staff. And we'll bring people like you into my office. I mean, it's cheaper to spend $6,000 to have you come in.
That's right. Than
it would be to take 20 or 30 people to you. And yeah, we've done that.
I was figuring, when you came to our training camp, I got to figuring the numbers of what you spent to bring, and your group at the time actually lined up in front of the room, stretched from one wall to the other.
Yeah, there were 22 people. No, there was more. There was 25 because I brought the doctors. The airplane tickets were like $400 a pop. The hotel was, you know, a couple hundred a night. We weren't making money while we were there. I figured it cost me, you know, $150,000, $180,000, you know, just for that
to close up. And
it was worth every minute. Now, you're having a deal in Dallas here,
right?
And I've already recommended to 6 or 7 people to go to it, just people that I know in Dallas said, you need to go to this. So
great. So I have to say that I'm impressed that that's your observation, that when a doctor's stuck, They got to look at themselves every time.
I had one doctor. You probably remember Quest.
Yes.
He's a doctor who was one of the principals in Quest. And you know, he is a whole lot like a north end of a southbound horse kind of guy. Really type A, really not a fun person to be around. And he's even changed, where he used to work in this field and industry, he's doing something else. And he came to me and said, I want you to help me do this. And I didn't want to work with him at all. And so finally I said, I'll do one thing for you. I'll write some recommendations, you do it. So all I did was I called the staff and said, tell me what's wrong. And I typed it up in a letter to him and sent it to him. He doubled his practice. Your staff knows what's wrong. You can't let them go roughshod. You've got to add vision in systems, and you know, you have to have outside people come in. You've got to create that hunger. They've got to see the cause and effect of that. But you were asking earlier about hygiene and what I did in case presentation. I mean, they're so prepped, and we tie so much urgency to the treatment, and we hand them off, and the staff knows what to do. They all know. I mean, in fact, I have patients, they'll go, well, gosh, you sound just like Sandy, my hygienist. You know, when I'm explaining the treatment, I said, really? Surprise, surprise. Yeah, I mean, we sound, or if Dr. Blinded walked in there, he said, well, Dr. Blinded said exactly the same thing. I remember, Greg, the very first time I heard you speak was talking about a chiropractor in downtown San Francisco was doing $200,000 or $300,000 a month. He had an Oriental associate that followed him around. He'd come from Korea or Japan, and he had this mentor kind of mentality where he followed this guy around. And Greg was telling a story about this guy, and he spoke perfect English. You know, it wasn't that he had any type of ethnic
accent
at all. But he followed this great doctor around, and he told exactly the same jokes, everything. And then Greg Jack was saying he was going back to the airport with this doctor and this young associate that was doing incredibly well, was doing $100,000 a month, something like that in chiropractic. And he just asked the senior doctor, he said, you know, I've been working for you for 2 or 3 years. He said, what is a Joe DiMaggio? He'd been telling a joke, a baseball joke. He didn't understand. But to the extent that they can become like you, if it's a successful formula, you know. And two, when we make this case presentation, my attitude is, I don't care if you accept the treatment. I've got 7 more patients right after you, and kind of like the little chili place that people are lined up outside the
right
door, the minute you don't care, they're going, well, wait, here's my money, you know, and can I pay cash for this, you know, because I don't want to use my insurance, and, you know, it's that way, and every staff person takes every step and makes that work, so.
Great. Mike, tremendous information. Thanks for coming and sharing, and thanks for all your help on the cruise. Last night, Mike had a private meeting for as many dentists that wanted to be there, and he's totally sold out, and everybody was raving about it. They had to either go see you or Charo.
I made it to Charo.
I heard she was great.
She's an incredible musician. She's a classical guitarist, and just
so
amazing.
That warns you, never go up against Charo, but you still won. So, Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right.